And greetings again. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hola. Aloha. Weinihau. Namaste. Konnichiwa. Bonjour. Guten Tag. Half a day. Salam. Shalom. Peace. Now, from the entertainment capital of the genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Industrial Complex of the Corporation of the United States of Listeria, it is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, where it is quite simple. You are invited to go vegan. The life you save may be your own, and you're invited to stop eating animals, stop wearing animals, stop purchasing products tested on animals. Yes, indeed. Deep down in your heart, you know that there is a vegan beating, waiting to break out from all of that saturated fat, huh? Well, I know. It's in some places, the V word is a little scary to people. Like in England, I got this off of prleap.com. It says, even though the word vegan is considered taboo, a dirty word by the UK tabloid newspapers, veganism is reaching out and inspiring people all over the world like never before in its 60-year history. Of course, we claim a 60-year history, but, well, if you go back to the book of Genesis, you know, it's at least a 6,000-year history, Genesis 1:29, huh? Well, anyway, Tony Bishop Western, author of Vegan by Hamlin, says, quote, a journalist from one of the top UK tabloids told me that their editor had banned them from using the word vegan as it was too scary for their readers. All health and beauty stories have to be dumbed down to use the word vegetarian instead of vegan. Also, by the way, herb tea was on the taboo list there also. He goes on in his quote, the lack of an amiable vegan in a major TV soap and the apparent UK tabloid decision to reserve the word vegan for crowd control and shock tactics may be the only two things stopping a tidal wave of veganism being unleashed, says Tony. See, it's the word, huh? The word is scary. The Vegan Society reported a threefold increase in applications to its internationally recognized vegan trademark symbol that identifies authentic vegan products. Going on here from this, it says, last year, Ford and Toyota in the USA targeted vegans, recognizing them through focus groups to be at the epicenter of their targeted aspirational audience. Prior to the Vegan Society's Diamond Jubilee, there was one vegan festival a year in London. Now vegan festivals and events to celebrate World Vegan Day on the 1st of November are springing up all over the world. And by the way, yes, World Vegan Day, the first day of November. How about Vegan World Day, the first day of summer, June 21st every year, which we've been promoting here at the station for a few years, and I got a call from a radio station in Kansas City that asked me to do an interview this week related to Vegan World Day. So Vegan World Day on the first day of summer would be the day when everyone is encouraged to live the day as a vegan, to eat only foods that are completely vegetarian, no animal products, to walk in the shoes of a vegan that day, which, of course, would mean your shoes would not be leather. So, you know, it's just the concept there is it's the first day of summer, day of most light, and quick, grab the day before, you know, the National Ice Cream Cone Foundation or something grabs it. So first day of summer as Vegan World Day was recognized by the enormous food company Aramark. In fact, Aramark sent out a press release saying, vegan options more popular than ever on college campuses. Aramark focuses on meeting customer needs in honor of Vegan World Day. And this came across the Business Wire on June 21st. Aramark Nationwide Research has revealed that out of more than 100,000 college students surveyed, nearly a quarter said finding vegan meals on campus, which contain no meat, fish, poultry, or other products derived from animals, such as dairy, eggs, or honey, was important to them. To better serve its customers and in honor of Vegan World Day on June 21st, Aramark, NYSERMK, this is a New York Stock Exchange company, is recognizing June 21st as Vegan World Day and the importance of, well, vegans to its business, actually. Aramark is a worldwide provider of managed services. It's increased its number of vegan menu items on campuses and continues to work with campus vegetarian and vegan resource groups to meet customer demand. Of course, when I say vegetarian, I mean vegan. I don't use that hijacked word, you know, that perhaps the dairy industry has hijacked the word vegetarian or the poultry industry. But if you can tell me that sitting down to a cheese omelet and a glass of milk serves any benefit, you call yourself a vegetarian, but you still suffer the heart of the health risks, the environmental damage, the cruelty to animals. So, back to the Aramark press release. It says, just for you, which is trademark, just for you healthy menu program caters to student preferences. Aramark's innovative and award-winning just for you healthy menu program provides chefs with dozens of flavor-packed vegan recipes along with the tools to train staff and the menu to direct customers. And, you know, they're really serious about this. They're maintaining the integrity and separating utensils used for vegan foods as opposed to those contaminated by animal products, you know. So very interesting. It says, our dining styles research has demonstrated that demand for vegan is especially strong among college students, as 24% of students indicated that vegan dishes were important to them, said Jennifer Bland Campbell, MSRD, Senior Director of Nutritional Program Development for Aramark. With Just For You, we're able to customize our menu mix to reflect how students eat on each campus and offer foods that fit into their own dining style. So it's catching on big, even if the word scares some people, if the V word is a little scary. I remember when we first started doing the show 4.5 years ago, how one potential advertiser kept saying to me, "Oh, please, Bob, don't call it Go Vegan. Call it Go Veggie. Call it Go Veg. Tame it, you know, tame it a bit, you know." But no need. The V word, I think it's understandable and profitable to Aramark, okay? So it's wonderful to see that celebration, don't be scared by the word. Be scared by the meat. Be scared if you're not, if you don't fit in that category, if you can't classify yourself as a vegan. The rest is pretty scary, huh? So it's very popular, and actually it's becoming so popular. You know, a lot of the unemployed recruiters for the Army, you know, who have been losing their jobs because, well, no one seems to want to sign up for ArachNam. Well, a lot of those recruiters are now on campus with a new recruitment message, actually.
Oh, new one. I know, and you're going to be the hottest controversial vegan talk show host on the face of the planet.
Yes, a recruitment message that is becoming more and more popular as we just discussed with Aramark there. You know, maybe vegan studies should be a course offered on campus. It has historical implications, philosophical, biological, environmental, you name it. It applies, right? Actually, one of the courses could be taught by one of today's guests coming up on Go Vegan with Bob Linden. We will be speaking to Professor Robert Sussman. Is man a true predator? Is man at the top of the food chain? Well, this will be a very interesting discussion here. Revelations coming up. Holy cow, you know, it seems that all the predators were out over the past few days trying to take a bite out of PETA, with a controversy happening stemming from what's been going on in North Carolina. The Fox propaganda channel was going for blood, asking, well, is PETA guilty of the cruelty it professes to oppose? And, you know, Fox, you kind of expect that from Fox and, you know, the entire, ABC, NNB, CBS, PBS, Fox censorship channel altogether. But unfortunately, I also heard rumblings and mumblings from some animal rights activists. And, well, you know, I know that sometimes we're pretty good at complaining. We have a lot about which to complain when it comes to how animals are treated, and so we can be a complaining lot. And but I would like to remind the animal activists that let's take a deep breath here before we ever get on PETA's case. I'd like to remind you that PETA is one of the greatest organizations, if not the greatest organization, to grace this good earth. And gosh, that the world is such a better place for there actually being a PETA, and that PETA does more good in the world every day. Every single day, PETA does more good in the world than, say, a George W. Bush or a Dick Cheney or a Ken Tom Lay DeLay or McRonald McDumsfeld will ever do in their entire lifetimes. I mean, PETA is just that historic organization, and maybe should get the benefit of the doubt when rumors start to fly, or at least get an explanation of what's going on, since I have never seen PETA act not out of compassion for animals, and PETA is always a target because it represents action with conscience and compassion over exploitation for greed and profit. And PETA is often right, and people feel guilty, makes people feel guilty. But wouldn't it be great if the animal activists who are upset about what's been going on with PETA in the past few days, wouldn't it be great if they would pick up the phone and call each other to rejoice each time that something happens that PETA accomplishes, for the oppressed? Wouldn't it be great? And PETA's campaigns, they expose so much and help so many animals. And, just this week, PETA's saying thank you to American Eagle and Timberland and Limited Brands for pledging not to use cruelly obtained Australian wool. As I said, those companies have joined the, it's kind of an exploding list right now of prestigious retailers and top fashion designers that have joined the retail-led movement to reform the Australian wool industry and to end the cruel practices of mulesing and live sheep exports. These retailers combined 2005 sales total over $11.5 billion for more than 4,800 retail locations around the world. PETA is celebrating these companies' pledges to take a stand against the cruelty, the mutilation, by refusing to use Australian merino wool. Millions of abused Australian sheep would be celebrating too if they knew that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So I would say, get on the phone and call your friends and say, well, here's another PETA accomplishment. All of the accomplishments of PETA with its major campaign against Kentucky Fried Chicken and its cruelty to chickens. Go to the website, PETA.org. See what PETA does in a day. And, PETA is right there on behalf of animals no matter what. PETA's work is so controversial. even Al Jazeera refuses to cover it. And Al Jazeera with, always showing the beheadings and all of that. Well, Al Jazeera refuses to air a 30-second TV ad showing the atrocities committed against Australian sheep. Al Jazeera, the Qatar-based television network, which in the past has aired images of mutilated bodies and other horrors of war, has decided not to air a 30-second TV spot from People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals containing video footage of atrocities committed against Australian sheep, which are raised for wool and later shipped alive to the Middle East for slaughter. The footage shows lambs who were partially skinned alive during a procedure called mulesing. Sheep which are repeatedly kicked as they are loaded onto death ships, and sheep who are dragged and kicked in the head as their throats are slit in full view of other sheep, these Australian sheep. The ad included a narration of the following quote by the late Imam B.A. Hafiz al-Masri of the Shah Jahan Mosque located in the U.K., his quote was, "If animals have been subjected to cruelties in their breeding, transport, slaughter, or in their general welfare, meat from them is considered impure and unlawful to eat. Haram. The flesh of animals killed by cruel methods, al-Muthaya, is carrion, al-Mujathamad. Even if these animals have been slaughtered in the strictest manner, if cruelties were inflicted on them otherwise, their flesh is still forbidden food, haram." End quote. Mule Sing is a painful mutilation in which Australian farmers use gardening shears to cut skin and flesh from lambs' backsides without painkillers in a crude attempt to reduce maggot infestation. Even though humane control methods exist, millions of Australian sheep are shipped to the Middle East through all weather extremes, mired in their own waste aboard open-deck ships. Many sick and injured sheep are thrown overboard to the sharks or ground up alive in mincing machines. PETA urged Al Jazeera to reconsider accepting the ad, which is part of PETA's international campaign calling for a boycott of Australian wool until Mule Sing and live exports are stopped. Did everybody call around this week and talk about the stores that are not going to sell that cruel product? So anyway, I have just the most undying respect for PETA, and want to know what the story is behind the scenes. So, what is the story behind the scenes? Well, sent some material from PETA this week. Let's see. Hi, Bob. Here are some facts, transcript of our news conference, and media comment for you. Also, photos of examples of animals PETA helps from North Carolina. Warning, a bit graphic. More details and photos of a Verde County shelter also on helpinganimals.com. Helpinganimals.com. Okay, the general statement from PETA to the media, due to the pending legal proceedings in North Carolina and the recent inaccurate reports, we will refrain from providing any further information or statements relating to our work in that state or to matters regarding the legal proceedings until they are concluded. We remain absolutely certain that no cruelty to animals took place and that the facts will bear this out. Please see helpinganimals.com for information. As regards to the Center for Consumer Freedom, CCF, they have no business commenting on a dog and cat euthanasia issue. As they represent Philip Morris, PETA opposes its tobacco experiments on animals. KFC, PETA is arguing that chicken leg and wing breaks and live scalding must stop for the 800 million animals it kills a year. And other steak, cattle, and logging interests. Please learn more by visiting consumerdeception.com. That's consumerdeception.com. And regarding what happened at a news conference, PETA statement at news conference regarding euthanasia from June 17th from Daphna Nekminovich. Since the news from North Carolina, we have received countless inquiries. The two most pressing are, why is PETA in North Carolina, and why do you euthanize animals? We would like the opportunity to answer these two questions. We will take your additional questions at the end, it says here. First, let me explain why we started going to North Carolina. My name is Daphna Nekminovich, and I oversee PETA's Domestic Animal and Wildlife Department, including our Community Animal Project and our SPAY Clinic, SNIP. Let me give you some background as to how and why we started working in North Carolina. In 2000, PETA was contacted by a police officer who was distressed by conditions in the county pound. We were given photographs which showed one dog drowning in a pool of water, too sick and weak to lift her head, a starving dog, and a dead puppy found in the gas chamber shed. PETA then visited the Burdick County Animal Shelter to see things firsthand. We found sick, injured animals in need of veterinary care, a leaky windowless gas box in which animals were placed to be killed, and facility that had no electricity and no covering for its cages. PETA immediately offered aid to Burdick County and to the city of Windsor, which operates its own facility within the county limits. There, animals were restrained on a metal pole and shot with a .22 caliber. Shortly after this, we found out that Hertford County's homeless animals were also gassed. We made arrangements to pay a local veterinarian to euthanize those animals by painless injection. PETA to this date subsidizes humane euthanasia at the Hertford facility and has so far paid nearly $9,000 for this service. Our trips to Northampton County began after it was discovered that a local veterinarian was illegally killing animals with injections of a paralytic succinylcholine chloride, which causes respiratory arrest before loss of consciousness, leaving animals to suffer horrific deaths by suffocation while their organs freeze up. PETA has spent well over $250,000 to improve the facilities, build and deliver dog houses for animals left outside with nothing but a metal barrel or not even so much as a tree in all weather. When we try sometimes, we still can't prevent suffering. This poor dog, despite our efforts, was retied in such a way that he could not reach the shade we had provided him by delivering a doghouse. He baked to death in the hot sun just 2 weeks ago. We also spay and neuter animals, as well as provide other medical care, apply flea and tick preventative to chain dogs who become so infested that they open sores in their bodies from scratching, give away straw and tie-outs, send animal control officers for training, hire staff to clean the shelters, purchase supplies for the shelter, and even build from the ground up a brand new cat house barn in Burdick County. We have only ever helped and alleviated cruelty and suffering. I would like to show you these photographs, which she does, and I say it's helpinganimals.com. Take a look at the photo album. Okay, then she turns it over to PETA's president, Ingrid Newkirk, who says, quote, "Now, let me explain why PETA believes euthanasia is the kindest gift to a dog or cat, unwanted and unloved. Please also try to put yourself in the place of those of us at PETA who care deeply for animals, yet who have to hold the animals in our arms and take their lives because there is nowhere for them to go. The fact is that we cannot stop euthanasia until people stop letting dogs and cats bring new litters into the world. For every litter born, it is estimated that over 1,000 more animals will end up being destroyed as those litters grow up and start having litters themselves within 6 months. The numbers of unwanted animals are pretty impossible for the average person to imagine. If you have not worked in an open admission shelter, one which does not set a limit on the number of animals it will accept and then turn away the others, you would be shocked. North Carolina shelters kill 35 animals annually for every 1,000 residents, and as you have heard, most do not die a humane death. Someone asked, could we not bring the animals from North Carolina to Virginia to be placed? Well, Virginia already faces its own problem of large numbers of animals who can't find homes. We have actively lobbied for increased license fees for unsterilized animals. We were instrumental in getting Norfolk to pass a regulation requiring the animal shelter to pre-sterilize animals before adoption. And we run a spay clinic 7 days a week to try to help. Citizens who are up in arms about the need for euthanasia should join us in being up in arms about stopping the flow of unwanted animals. We were asked, could we not advertise for homes for them? The open admission shelters advertise every day for the animals they have, yet every day they must euthanize. They have no choice because not enough people come to offer good homes to the ones already there, and more animals are coming through the door. Could we not turn the animals loose on the street? No, they would come to a bad end in traffic or by starving, or they would simply end up in the shelter again. Could we not run a refuge for them ourselves? Well, we could warehouse them and fill this building in a month easily. There isn't the space, the money, or the staff to do that properly for even 1 month's worth of unwanted animals. And what would we do the month after that and the month after that? That is why we try to prevent current and future suffering by doing two things. One, we work at the roots, trying to stem the flow of unwanted so that there will be fewer to euthanize. We do that by education, by advocacy, through pushy ads, by running a mobile sterilization clinic that has spayed thousands of animals in the area alone in the last few years. And two, we give the unwanted animals a painless exit from an uncaring world. We will not shy away from doing society's dirty work as long as the alternative is a life of misery and a bad death. And that is the alternative. As you have heard Ms. Nachmanovich say, in North Carolina, in these impoverished counties, the alternative has been slow death or bad death. Animals have frozen to death in the pounds there for a lack of heat in the winter. They have drowned there during floods. They used to be shot in the head with a .22. And I ask you to imagine one man out there trying to hold the dog with one hand and shoot accurately with the other. And they were gassed to death in a windowless metal box, struggling to get out. We would not be doing our job if we didn't stop those things. There is no magic wand that will stop euthanasia, but each of us who has been upset by realizing that it happens can look into our soul and honestly ask ourselves, what am I doing to stop the overpopulation crisis for dogs and cats, to stop the killing? If the answer is just feeling bad about it or complaining, that is no help at all. To fix the flow, people must stop breeding, casually acquiring, and then dumping animals. We did not create the problem, but we try hard to fix it every single day. We also, from the very beginning, have begged North Carolina counties to allow us to help them establish on-site adoption programs, and we can only hope that the current level of interest, after all these years, may allow that to happen at last. Finally, let me say how PETA euthanizes, and you are welcome to watch us do that by appointment under conditions that you will not disturb the animal. PETA uses a barbiturate, sodium pentobarbital, to deliver one injection into the dog or cat's leg. The animal is held lovingly and petted and talked to as the solution enters the veins. For many of these animals, that is the only loving touch they have ever felt. Unconsciousness occurs in a matter of 2 or 3 seconds and occurs without trauma, without pain, and without the animal knowing. PETA has never made a secret of the fact that most of the animals picked up in North Carolina are euthanized. We want attention for euthanasia, but no one is usually interested in this depressing story. Now we hope that the counties of North Carolina will still not only welcome our services, for it would be a terrible step back if all that is focused on is the matter of the bodies put into the dumpsters. That conduct disgusts us, violates PETA's protocol, happened without our knowledge, and can never be allowed to happen again. But our work must go on. Thank you. And then Ingrid took questions there. So there you have it. And just from another statement, it said it is against PETA's policy to put the bodies of animals in dumpsters, and we are appalled that a member of our staff apparently did that. There is no excuse for that, and despite the fact that she is a caring soul, we have suspended her from her work. So that is the latest on the controversy going on this this week in PETA. And I invite you to go to the PETA website and see all the good that it does. That's PETA.org. And I invite you to support this radio show with a tax-deductible donation. You can make your check payable to Go Vegan. GoVeganRadio.com is a project of 501c3 International Humanity Center. So you make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio. Mail it to P.O. Box 40246. And that's San Diego 92164. All this information and the ability to donate online is also available at the website where this show is archived for your listening enjoyment every week and stays there permanently. The website is goveganradio.com. We have Robert Sussman coming up to talk about, well, is man the predator that we think he is? And Don Moncrief of Farm Animal Reform Movement, and the Great Animal Rights Conference coming up in July in Los Angeles. All this coming up today on Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Going vegan just got easier. Presenting Follow Your Heart Chicken Free Chicken. Now at natural food stores everywhere. All the taste, none of the bird. Vegan, low fat, low sodium, cholesterol free, chicken free chicken from Follow Your Heart. 11 grams of protein per 2.5 ounce serving. Ready to serve, delicious hot or cold, like on a sandwich with new organic veggies. You are what you eat. Don't be chicken. Try chicken free chicken. Get some at Follow Your Heart on Sherman Way, a block and a half east of Topanga, Canoga Park, and natural food stores everywhere.
And also from Follow Your Heart, don't forget Vegan Gourmet. Vegan Gourmet cheese alternatives, they melt. So you don't need that scary dairy in order to have nachos and enchiladas and pizza and all of those good things. All of that coming to you from Follow Your Heart, which has a few wonderful vegan salad dressings also. Creamy miso ginger, balsamic vinaigrette, and Italian vinaigrette.
Oh, no, now look what they're giving to people. Animal burgers.
Oh, arrest them. No, well, they wouldn't be giving them animal burgers at Rancho's Natural Foods Market at 3918 30th Street in North Park in San Diego because the market has gone vegan. It's following the trend. It knows where it's at, and you should know where it's at. 3918 30th Street. Except for honey, the market is vegan. Wonderful deli with delicious entrees and soups, 100% vegan. Get your organic produce and bulk items. You can take your produce right over to the juice bar, have it juiced right there for you. You can also get a shot of goji juice. Himalayan goji juice is available at the juice bar at Rancho's Natural Foods Market. And check out the great salad bar also with raw dressings. You can get wheatgrass juice, organic salsa, and, you know, everything, the cookies and the chips and all the things that, you know, we sneak behind the door and eat after we have, you know, we show everybody we're having their organic salad. If you're a raw food enthusiast, Rancho's is the place for you, 3918 30th Street with a wide selection. And Rancho's has 3 Mexican restaurants in the San Diego area, one right next door at 3910 30th Street, and the two others, 1830 Sunset Cliffs Boulevard and 4705 Point Loma Avenue, each with close to 100 vegan menu options. And also, when you stop by Rancho's Natural Foods, you can pick up a bottle of goji juice.
Milk has blood in it. It's a great drink for vampires.
Now that is right. I wouldn't be drinking that. I would be drinking goji juice, certainly over milk. Goji is the new health discovery, Dr. Earl Mindell. Dr. Earl Mindell, who got Carl Lewis, the vegan athlete, Olympic athlete, vegan athlete too, vegan when he was most productive also. He gave up dairy because of Dr. Earl Mindell, who says that Himalayan goji juice is the most important health discovery that he has seen in the last 40 years. Doesn't mean, you know, it hasn't been around for thousands of years, which it has in Asia. Goji means happy, and the folks take it for, it relieves depression. People live long lives with goji, and there's a lot of evidence that it protects your body from premature aging through its powerful antioxidant action, increases energy and strength, maintains healthy blood pressure, reduces your risk of cancer, reduces cholesterol, promotes normal blood sugar for those who are concerned about diabetes. And I know that Michael Akfaje's father has been concerned about diabetes. And I always say to people, you know, goji will help you, but you gotta, you know, you gotta go for the full cure, and that's giving up animal products in your diet. And all I can say is chagi sa gofi mangni. Well, that's not all I can say, but it's that probably is all I can say in the language of Chamorro, which means, you know, tastes so good. Huh? And Michael Akfaji's father has been taking it, and it's normalized his blood sugar. He's suffering from diabetes. So for the Pacific Islander community here in Southern California, the states around the world, and in Guam, Michael Akfaji says, Cha gi sa gofi mung ni. Try it because it tastes really good. And don't forget, it's really good for you. Michael and his family and his friends have been reaping the benefits of goji juice, one of the most nutritionally dense foods in all the world. And you can get yours from Michael from his website, loveberry.freelife.com. It comes with a full 90-day money-back guarantee, whether you drink one or a ton. So why not give it a try? Drink goji juice for 3 months. See what it does for you. Go to loveberry.freelife.com. You can also go to the website I have reserved, which is govegan.freelife.com.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
And we continue now with our guest, our first guest, Professor Robert Sussman. He received his PhD from Duke University in 1972 and has been at Washington University since 1973. He's currently professor of anthropology and environmental sciences. Professor Sussman is a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science and currently serves on its executive committee, the Committee of Council Affairs. And he is the immediate past editor of the American Anthropologist, which is the flagship journal of the American Anthropological Association. And Professor Sussman's research interests focus on the ecology, behavior, and evolution of non-human and human primates. We forget, we are primates too, and we're being studied by Dr. Sussman. Welcome, Professor Sussman. How are you today?
Pretty good. How are you?
Terrific. Glad to have you here today. And your latest book has just been released, Man the Hunted, Primates, Predators, and Human Evolution. Robert W. Sussman and Donna Hart authored it. And well, I believe anybody listening today is probably thinks that we, the human, is like an apex predator, aren't we? Right at the top there, we're right at the food chain. Isn't that correct, Professor Sussman?
Well, that's certainly the conventional wisdom. Most people believe that, even anthropologists believe that. However, most of the theories that are usually referred to as man the hunter have no real fossil evidence to provide the proof of that particular theory. It's conventional wisdom, but it's not very wise.
So they have no evidence. You believe you have evidence that man is perhaps more rooted in being not the predator but the prey.
Well, we think the earliest humans that evolved were basically very much like a number of other primate species that live on the edges of forests and move into the savanna and grasslands. And most of these primates basically are prey species. In fact, as antelopes and deer in the savannas of Africa, these kinds of primates are predated upon with a rate of about 4 to 8% per year, which is just the same as it is for, as I said, the prey, what we usually think of as prey species.
Mm-hmm. And what time period are you talking about here now when you refer
back? We're talking about from about 3 million to about 5 to 6, maybe even 7 million years ago, the first humans to evolve.
I see. And humans were prey to what animals, would you think?
Well, in fact, you know right now that humans, in places where there aren't, you know, sort of no forests, where they're just parking lots, like in, say, San Diego or Los Angeles or St. Louis, where I live, there aren't any predators. But when we go up into the mountains of California and we go into Africa, humans are still predators, prey to many, many predators. A number of wild dogs, cats, bears, sharks, even large hawks. Small children can be taken by large primate-eating birds. So even now we're prey species to all of these predators. However, if we think about 3 to 5 to 7 million years ago, there were 10 times as many predators, and they were 10 times as large as they are now. There were dogs around that are called bear dogs because they were as large as bears. Saber-toothed tigers were as large as the largest dogs that live today and had 6-inch fangs that were just like daggers. So we had many, many, many predators that were very large animals. And at that time, humans were about 60 to 100 pounds. and no larger than 5 feet tall.
Wow. So what proof is there of this, that we were prey?
Well, the thing is, what would you look for if you were trying to determine what the behavior of these early hominids were? Well, you'd look at the bones, you'd look at the actual fossils, you'd look at what they had to work with to exploit their environment. Then you'd look at the evidence for the actual environment. And so what we have is the skeletons, and we have environmental influences, and then we also have the actual predators that were there. And we also have all of the things that we find on the bones, for example, wounds from predators, and even animals that we can actually see fang marks in the skull. But when we look at the fossils, for example, the first thing, as I said, we were very small. The second thing is, when we first evolved, we didn't have any stone tools or weapons. We had nothing that we could take down an elephant or a big mammal with. And most important, if we look at our teeth, we had small canines and small incisors that weren't very sharp. We had dull and very thick enamel that was mainly used for grinding vegetable material.
Well, now that's an interesting point, because I often talk to people about physiology, and we talk about comparing carnivores to herbivores, and to me it always seems that humans, because of their long intestine and the different acids in the mouth, the humans seem to be more of the vegetable eaters. But then people always say to me, well, no, look at our teeth, look at our fangs, look at, you're saying that we really don't have those meat-eating teeth.
Well, in fact, if you look at human teeth, and everybody can look in the mirror right now, and you see you don't have any large canines or fangs, and then compare that to a dog or a cat, even compare it to a gorilla. A gorilla has large front canines, but basically those are for tearing bark. And if you look at the rest of his teeth, they don't have shearing crests, and they have thick enamel, and they basically are essentially vegetarian. So gorillas even have large fangs but aren't meat eaters. We don't have large fangs. We don't have any indication
in our
dentition now, nor 5 million years ago. In fact, 5 million years ago, if we couldn't cook meat, and the fire didn't get discovered until about 800,000 years ago, 5 million years ago, we had no weapons and we had no fire. There's no way that a human with teeth like ours, and their teeth were very much like ours, could actually take down an antelope or an elephant and, without cooking it or cutting it, eat the meat. In fact, if anybody wants to try an experiment, they could go out and take a steak that they got at the store and try to chew it without cooking it and without cutting it. That's what you would have had 5 million years ago.
Wow. So
think about that.
So no weapons, no fire, no teeth. Hard to be a meat eater in those days.
That's right. And if, just like you said, if you look at our digestive tract, it's basically that of an omnivore. And most of the primates that have a digestive tract like ours are about 98% to 96% plant eaters. They'll include about 2 to 4% insects, small lizards, maybe birds and birds' eggs. But the rest of their diet is essentially non-meat diet. And if we look at those societies that eat a lot of meat versus those that don't, that's where we find high incidences of all kinds of what we might call rich man's diseases, cancer, colon cancer especially, but all kinds of other diseases.
Right. So are we the only primate that doesn't know what's good for us?
Well, in fact, it's interesting. If you introduce primates to bad foods, like sugar foods and things like that, they will get diabetes and they will get sick. In fact, this happens with many hunting and gathering societies, or we should call them gathering and hunting societies. When they stop or are forced to stop their natural way of life, they're given sugar and lots of meat and lots of say, milks and things like that, and they start getting diabetes and all kinds of sicknesses.
Right.
So, yes, it is true that you have to be introduced to these foods in some unusual way to start eating foods that are bad for you. Normally, if you're out in the wild, and children, if they're given what we call a cafeteria diet, where they can choose anything they want, before they're sort of taught to eat the wrong things, will choose the right things to eat.
Right. Yeah, I think that most people would look at an apple and salivate and look at a cow and, you know, say moo.
Well, they wouldn't certainly knock it down with a stick and try to cut it up with a stick tool and try to chew it without cooking it. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, well, normally I don't encourage people to eat meat, but I think your experiment is good. Everybody, you know, they're going to be having their barbecue. You know, well, let's eat the meat before it's charred like that, like you suggest.
And
go get your steak and eat it without cooking it and see.
And pretend you don't have a knife.
Oh.
Try to do it just with your teeth and your hands.
Right, you don't have a knife, you don't have fire, and you don't have the right teeth for it, as we're learning
and
right
here. And in fact, if you want to think about this, if you look at the teeth, you might get a introductory physical anthropology book or biological anthropology book, and look at the teeth of the earliest humans called Australopithecus afarensis, and you'll see that their teeth are essentially like ours. They don't have large canines, they have flat, large molars, they don't have large incisors, they don't have sharp crests, so it would basically be an animal that had a stronger jaw, bigger teeth, but basically teeth like ours, trying to eat these things without any of the modern techniques.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. We're talking to Professor Robert Sussman. He's with Washington University in St. Louis and is the co-author of the book Man the Hunted, Primates, Predators, and Human Evolution, co-written with Donna Hart. And
by the way, I should tell you, Donna Hart is she got her PhD under me at Washington University, but she spent 20 years as a conservation activist working with Marlon Perkins.
Oh.
So she has a long history working for conserving predators, actually.
I see. And you have a history of sanctuaries and being off in Africa and studying primates in Central America and South America.
Yes, my main focus has been in Madagascar, where I've set up a couple of reserves, and also in South America and Central America. Yes,
I see. What effect would this have on human behavior then? I mean, if we think of ourselves as hunters, that seems to be more competitive than cooperative. So what sort of society develops from your theory here?
Well, in fact, we go into that in great detail in the book, and I'll only touch up on a few things here, but all of the primates that live in the similar kind of conditions that early humans would have lived in have fairly similar types of social organization, where they have a central group which is really focused around the female and their offspring, and the males are usually basically vigilant and protective of the females and their offspring. Because if you think about it, in evolutionary terms, one male with a number of females, let's say three or four females, you could still have four offspring. If you have four males with four females, you can only have four offspring. So the males are fairly much, they're dispensable. So that's probably why males evolved to be the ones that interfere between predators and the prey. They're the ones that usually protect the females and offspring. And that happens in all of these sort of savanna and edge species primates. So what we look at is probably a very cooperative group, with females being the main socializing animals, and probably they're the most inventive and the ones that are aware of the home ranges, because the males often migrate from group to group, whereas the females stay the same, and this helps mix up the genetics. So over time, you have males protecting the females, and females sort of being the center of society. But the main thing is that there's a lot of cooperation, because you need a lot of communication, you need to stay close to one another, you need to be aware of the environment, so you're always sort of interacting. And this might, whenever we think of predator-prey interactions, we always think that the predator has to be one step ahead of the prey, or the prey will cause the extinction of the predator will cause the extinction of the prey. So this is what causes the evolution of sort of a coevolutionary interaction between the predator and the prey, and the prey species has to be one step ahead. So much of our evolution may have been pushed by this fact that we were a prey species and we had to be a little bit smarter, a little bit more agile, a little bit more communicative and cooperative than our predators.
Wow. So being prey actually led us to live by our wits more.
That's exactly what we pose. And we have in the book, we have a lot of psychological and other types of evidence to show that this was is a better hypothesis than the one that was conventional wisdom at this time.
Well, I'm all for cooperation over competition at this point. So.
Well, in fact, there's much more evidence that that's what was happening. Most primates, in fact, one very interesting point, all primates, monkeys and apes, that live in the daytime, that are awake in the daytime, live in cooperative social groups.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing, isn't it? And
yes.
The reason for that, and most primatologists, most ecologists would agree, that that's because you have to live in groups, have more eyes and ears, have more ways of defending yourself, and you do this by living in groups. So group living is actually a adaptation for being a prey.
Wow, that is very interesting. This sounds like a fascinating book.
I think it's not only got a lot of information, but it's actually fun to read. It's very much like a mystery book.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, it's Man the Hunted, Primates, Predators, and Human Evolution. Donna Hart, Robert W. Sussman. How can people get the book? We have about a minute left. So
probably the best way and the easiest way to get the book is just to log on Man the Hunted on Amazon.com.
Man the Hunted. So log on to Amazon.com, check for Man the Hunted there.
And I think they have a special on it for its introduction.
Okay, so there's a special introductory price, and we will find out about our true history. look at the myth we live under. We're at the top of the food chain, huh?
Well, I think one of the interesting things is to look at the kind of evidence that we have and compare it to the kind of evidence that this sort of man the hunter killer hypothesis has, and you'll see that our evidence is much, much better.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you for being with us today, Dr. Sussman. It's very informative, and the book sounds fascinating. I hope people will go out and buy it and enjoy
it. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for being here. Okay.
Okay.
Terrific. I think I better get to the spots, Leo, and then talk to Don. You know, we're always the running out of time on the show. Go Vegan. Go to the website, please. It's goveganradio.com. If you missed any part of this interview, tell your friends. We're shattering myths here today. Yes, man the hunter, man the predator, man at the top of the food chain. Nope. But where else are you going to hear the nope? But Go Vegan with Bob Linden. And I'm glad you joined us today, and I invite you to make a tax-deductible donation. And we will have Don Moncrief coming up talking about Animal Rights 2005 coming up on Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
We're a country of fast food freaks and donut junkies.
Always talking about how delicious Veganaise is. No vegan kitchen should be without it. It dresses up even the simplest foods, like my favorite sandwich, avocado, tomato, and Veganaise. Or is it mashed up chickpeas, celery, onions, and Veganaise? Or a tofu burger with Veganaise? Well, I do know I love it on baked or steamed yams. Well, you think you'd read about Veganaise in a cookbook, it winning the American Tasting Institute Award? So I was surprised to see Veganaise in a book about stroke prevention. Yet there it is, page 194, in Stroke Free for Life by David Weber's MD, Chair, Cerebrovascular Diseases, and Director, Stroke Research Center, Mayo Clinic. And who would know better about a Mayo alternative? Try Veganaise, now in organic. Available at Follow Your Heart, Canoga Park, California, and natural food stores everywhere. Well, hooray for Hollywood. It now has a truly wonderful vegan restaurant called Truly. That's right, T-R-U-L-Y. Conveniently located on Hollywood Boulevard, right there at the Hollywood Boulevard exit off the 101. That's truly at 5907 Hollywood Boulevard at Bronson. And, you know, I like eating at a restaurant that says something like this on its menu, and I'm quoting from the Truly menu. We want to make a positive and healthful contribution to society by using products that are animal-free. We are making a statement to ourselves and others that we are conscientious eaters acting towards the greater good of all beings. So then bring it on, because the food is delicious. Not only is the food our cause, but we love it. And wonderful selections here from fantastic juices, and there's breakfast. Wonderful breakfast selections that you have there, from pancakes, a lot of a la carte choices, terrific soups, wonderful salads. I think you're really going to like Truly. Sandwiches and burgers, and try the lentil burger. It's really special. They have terrific wraps there, and fabulous noodle dishes. The curries are spectacular. Veggies and rice. So I highly recommend it. And if you're in the Hollywood area and you know, want lunch, you want it delivered, give Truly a call, 323-466-7958, or call Truly for your next catering. Free delivery with $10 purchase, free iced tea with $15 purchase, free spring rolls with $20 purchase, free small curry with $25 purchase. That's Truly, 5907 Hollywood Boulevard in Hollywood. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Stop by, and the food is great. Oh, maybe. Okay. Oh, just want to tell you, if you're looking for a natural way to alleviate any pain that you might be suffering, I strongly suggest that you get in touch with Julie Chang. Julie Chang at Chang Acupuncture and Associates in Kearny Mesa in San Diego. The phone number is 858-495-0771. And go to the website. It's sdhealthylife.com. sdhealthylife.com. At the website, you can see an interview that Julie did with NBC 739 about acupuncture. And you'll find out that, you know, this could be the way, instead of taking all those drugs and you hear about the harmful side effects and all of that. This is Chinese medicine that's been around for thousands of years, and Julie Chang specializes in alleviating pain and fertility issues. It gets your energy flowing right, not painful at all. Julie Chang at Chang Acupuncture and Associates, 7969 Engineer Road, Kearny Mesa, 858-495-0771. You know, you don't have to suffer through the pain. If you want to email Julie, it's info@sdhealthylife.com. Okay, we go. Is Don on the phone? We have Don on the line there, I hope. Oh, gosh, we just have a couple of minutes here. Dawn Moncrief is the new executive director of FARM, the Farm Animal Reform Movement, and she has two master's degrees from George Washington University. Her specialty is the connection between the production and consumption of meat and its negative impact on world hunger, especially for women in less developed countries. And Dawn came to work at FARM after volunteering with the Global Hunger Alliance and attending Animal Rights 2002 National Conference, coordinated by FARM. And now she will talk to us about the upcoming Animal Rights 2005 National Conference in Los Angeles, July 7th through the 11th at the Westin LAX Hotel. Hi, Dawn. How are you?
I'm good. Hi, Bob.
Terrific. Gosh, we only have a little over a minute here, so tell us about...
I'll have to talk fast.
Talk fast. What's going on with the conference?
Okay, well, we're really excited to be back on the West Coast. We were there in 2003 as just an experiment, and what we did, because we've always been on the East Coast, is we did ours in June, and then a month later we did one in L.A. In July, and we were all very scared. We had no idea what was going to happen, and it was a lot of work to try to do both conferences, but it was such a fantastic success that we are coming back now in 2005, and we're really just enthusiastic about it, because we're only doing one conference. We're not having to split our energies. All our resources, all our energy is coming to Los Angeles.
Let me give people the website, and let me ask you to come back. Can you come back again next week, Dawn?
Oh, of course. Okay, AR2005.org, because we're a nonprofit organization.
AR2005.org. You can register there or call 1-888-FARM-USA.
Yes, and we have early registration discounts, so please call, and all the details are online.
Okay, thanks so much, Dawn. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to Go Vegan with Bob Linda. Go to the website, goveganradio.com.